Yes, that was Cat Stevens singing Morning Has Broken. I thought it fitting because, as I don't know, there's a little trivia here. The words to that song were a poem written by Martin Luther, who, if you remember your history, was the father of the Protestant movement in first in Europe and then spread through the world. And so we're going to talk, do a little something a little different today. Michael usually takes on larger issues, global issues. We're going to take on something that's local, very close to home. And also, we have a fellow broadcaster who is a sufferer from one of the things that Michael has, or that Anthony has. But I was thinking about this a few days ago and about faith. Now, I've seen faith work in many, many ways. I remember 1992 sitting in a room in a little hall in Chimayo, New Mexico, with 20-odd people who came together looking at a disastrous situation in the local animal shelter. And we didn't know our rear ends from our elbows, but we had faith that we could make change in this place. And a few months later, we were running that shelter and turned it into a model for the area. In growing up, I saw faith in action with people like Martin Luther King. He had great faith in God and great faith in his cause, and that his cause was right. I saw thousands, hundreds of thousands of people go to the streets during the Vietnam War with the faith that they were right, that war was wrong, and we needed to end this horrible conflict. So, but today we're going to talk about, amongst other things, personal faith and how it, it's this remarkable story that I'm just going to let Anthony talk about. And welcome to KVMR, Anthony.
Thank you very much, John.
So your story begins, with your mother and father.
Yeah.
And why don't we start from the beginning?
I'd be glad to. My medical story, so to speak, started when I was at the age of 5, and I was diagnosed. I was actually out in the backyard with my dad. We were building a chicken coop, not a lofty project, but I was doing my best as a 5-year-old to emulate my dad and swing a little toy hammer every time he swung it at the real nails. And I just got tired, threw the hammer down, and just went into the house. And that was the first indication to my parents that something wasn't just quite right with me. And it actually was noticed a little bit later on when I was being cared for by a neighbor while my parents were at work, and they noticed it too, and they said, he's just very tired, seems very pale, just doesn't seem to have energy. And so my parents took me to the doctor. The doctor checked me out and gave them his diagnosis, and he said, I think he's just anemic and he's going to be just fine with some iron supplements, and why don't you go ahead and take the plan trip that you have. You're going to wanting to take a trip, I see, to Europe. So my parents went ahead to continue with that plan, but something didn't sit right with them, and they knew that they better check further into what was going on. So they took me to back to the doctor. The doctor sent me for blood tests, and the results came back that I didn't have anemia. I actually had acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And this was in the mid-70s. This was 1974, and at that time, if you were diagnosed with having leukemia, that was the death sentence. And so my parents were told that their child had this terminal illness and that he was not going to make it probably to his 10th birthday. I was 5 at the time, and they said that the most they could hope for was that I might make it to 5 years or to 10 years old if they did some drastic medical procedures, which at the time were experimental procedures of radiation and they were learning about chemotherapy and things like that. And, you know, the prognosis was your son's terminal. He's not going to live. And actually, John, that was the time when, having nowhere else to look, my mom was looking to the medical community to help her child, but they weren't offering any hope. And so my mom, discouraged, just didn't know where to turn. And it was actually the encouragement of other people around her that saw the despair she was in, that witnessed to her about having faith in God. And my mom actually didn't want to have anything to do with God, because she had a bad experience when she was pregnant with me, that her mother died of cancer. And my mom had prayed for her mom, you know, to get well, and she didn't. So she became very upset with God and just didn't think that that was worth even attempting. And
so it gets, you know, she was, like any mother, would be in absolute despair.
Oh, she was just, it was funny when they were at the hospital and where they were giving my diagnosis, my mom and dad became so upset that the doctor actually prescribed sedatives for them because they were so distraught.
And so, obviously, you survived that bout with leukemia. And then the story gets even more interesting.
Yeah. Well, after they had diagnosed, they had prescribed for me 36 days of an experimental radiation and 3 years of chemotherapy, and during the course of actually my treatments, my immune system came way down because of the chemotherapy, and I got a very rare double pneumonia when I was 7 years old, and that threatened to take my life immediately. The doctors felt that I wasn't going to make it through the night because it was ravaging my lungs and organs started to fail. They just didn't think that I would make it through to the morning. And that was where my mom realized that she was being told about faith, and she was being told that there is a reality, that God is real, and when you have nowhere else to turn, he's always there with his hands out waiting to help you. And she just got down on her knees, prayed out to God, said, "I know you gave me this child. He's my gift that you gave me, but I'm not God, and I can't keep him if you choose to take him." So she released me into his hands. And during the course of that night, my condition worsened, but then it started to change. And in the morning, I woke up, and it was like nothing had ever happened the night before. And the doctors were actually amazed. They said, "You know, we've only had one other case of the kind of pneumonia he's had happen in a leukemic patient, and they only had it in one lung, and their respiratory system was so distraught, they thought actually that it probably would be more humane if I died, because I had it in both lungs." But when they took x-rays in the morning, the findings that they found were not scars and damage. They were seeing lungs that were in good health, and my situation turned around from that point on.
Well, I heard of an interesting, similar situation. Last summer, I was privileged to interview a man up on the North San Juan Ridge who was founder of the Ananda community up there. And his given name was Donald Walters, and he took the name of Swami Kriyananda. He is an expert, a yogi in Kriya Yoga. And last May, he got this horribly debilitating, something happened, and he was literally on death's doorstep. And he prayed and said, "God, if you want me, I'm ready to go. Take me. But if you think I have more to do, I'm here to do that." And he made a miraculous recovery. And when I talked with him this time, I saw this man who's was so different than the year before, just really filled with I can't describe anything else but the love of God. So continue your story.
No problem, John. Well, you know, I, as a Christian, I read the Bible, and I've read in the Bible where God promises if you look for Him with your whole heart that you will find Him. And, you know, when you're at that point of desperation and you have nowhere else to look and you find yourself flat on your back, you're in that perfect position to look up. And when you are searching for Him, He's not hard to find, and He will prove Himself to you. And if it's in His will and He has other plans for you, it doesn't matter what the medical community might say to you. His plans supersede those. And, you know, I continued on with my life after that, growing up like a normal kid, and it wasn't until much later that I started to experience some of the after effects of some of the treatments that the medical community had done to me in trying to treat my cancer, the 3 years of chemotherapy and the radiation. And
the old expression is the cure is worse than the disease.
Sometimes it is, you know, but they do their best. They're, you know, their oath is to do no harm, and that's not their intention.
Yeah.
But sometimes inadvertently, you know, other things happen that are adverse.
Well, chemotherapy by its nature is a toxin to kill cancer cells.
Yeah.
They're refining it, but it's still pretty heavy-handed.
Yeah, they're basically putting poison in to kill the what they're trying to treat. And it wasn't until years later that I was actually on a trip over the other side of the coast, on the East Coast, and I contracted Epstein-Barr. And that started to set into effect something else that seemed to be lurking within me. And I started to have just weird numbness and tingling that started to happen in my hands and then in my feet. And doctors would check me out, but nobody could ever find what was wrong. And, you know, generically, they finally threw up their hands and said, it's got to be the radiation that you received as a kid for your cancer that's causing these weird situations, because we can't seem to pinpoint what exactly else it could be. So that was kind of the generic diagnosis I was given, is having after effects of radiation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that in your book you talk in depth about that it must have been amazingly frustrating to have these symptoms and go back and be told the same thing over and over again, and deep inside you knew something else was up.
Yeah, I knew there was something going on, but they could never seem to catch it in the act, so they never caught the smoking gun, so to speak. And As I was having all these tests done for these neurological sensations that I was having, this numbness and tingling, they did a brain scan. And when they got the results of the scan, they noticed a spot that was enhancing on my brain that they were kind of suspicious of. And so they watched it for about a year. And at the end of a year, they did a follow-up scan, and it turned out that it was a tumor. And they said, well, this tumor doesn't medically have anything to do with these strange neurological symptoms you're having, because it's this suspect spot is on the wrong side of your brain from the side that you're having neurological symptoms. So anyways, when they determined that it was a tumor, they just kind of left aside my other concerns and said, we have to deal with this tumor. And so that was actually the first of many tumors that I've had repeatedly, and they've all been side effects from the radiation that I received as a kid.
Yes, well, it's I can only describe what you've gone through is an ordeal, staggering proportions. But I need to remind our listeners that we're listening to Conversations, that I'm talking with Anthony Rebeck, and he has a book that is available locally, and the book is called just tell me when you're going to stick me. And we'll get to that, how where that title came from in a few minutes. I just need to remind, there's a couple of reminders that I need to take care of right now, and I was remiss in the beginning, is Sierra Solar Systems. We need to thank those folks for serving. They're serving the foothills and environment for 29 years, offering PG&E remote system design and installation. Their solar-powered showroom and warehouse is at the Alternative Building Center, 563 Idaho Maryland Road in Grass Valley. They can be reached at 530-273-6754 or sierrasolar.com. And I also wanted to, I was asked the other day when I was at the food bank, we pick up food yesterday actually for a hospitality house, and they are suffering some shortages up there, so if you have a pantry that you need to go through and you have some spare food, or you think about them when you go to the grocery store and pick up some non-perishable goods and cash. They had to buy food, $5,000 worth of food a few weeks ago just to keep their programs afloat. And you can contact Denise Wagner at 530-272-3796. A lot of people in this county depend on the food bank. It's supposed to be supplemental, but for some people it's more than that. So if you can find it in your heart, that's the request that they have asked me to put out. So you know, KVMR is a supporter of the food bank the last our last drive, and thank you again to all those folks that stepped forward to that. Part of those, the money has gone to our local food bank. So, Anthony, let's get back to your story. Now, you have gone through, you've had leukemia, you've had Epstein-Barr, double pneumonia, then you've had these sensations that turned out to be a brain tumor. Now, well, what else could go wrong?
Well, when they did check it out, they said that they didn't think the brain tumor was causing these strange sensations. And after the tumor was removed, the condition, the sensations continued. They would come and go and come and go. And every time I'd go to the doctor, they wouldn't be able to put their finger on what's going on. And I just started to think about it. And I started doing research and on the internet and looking at different things. And I thought, you know, I wonder if I may have multiple sclerosis. And every time I would present that to my doctor, they would just kind of dismiss it and say, no, we don't think that that's what you have. We're pretty sure this is all just after effects of the radiation. And see, at this point, all I was experiencing was numbness and tingling. So they figured those are just residual after effects that are neurological, and you're going to probably just have to learn to deal with them when they flare up, and that's what you're going to have to learn to get along with. And so I put that aside, but in the back of my head I kept thinking, there's something else wrong. And as I started to look at all the things that were happening to me, I had been told growing up how much God loved me and he had plans for me and he wanted good things for me. But it seemed to me that every time I was making a move in my heart where I wanted to learn more about him and I wanted to serve him deeper, these bad things would raise their head and happen. And I just started to, you know, I'm kind of an analytical person. And as I would look at the situation, I would go, you know, it seems like every time I try to get closer to God, something bad happens in my life. So after it kept happening, I just started to form a theory that, well, being close to God causes bad things to happen in your life. And so I finally got to a point where I was having a discouragement in my heart, and I had desired to be a doctor. And I was actually going to the university in Davis, doing, you know, pre-medical prerequisites to go in that direction. And there came a time when I wanted to be an EMT, working in an ambulance. And I had a bad driving record. And every ambulance company I went to wouldn't give me a job because of my driving record. And you know, I was getting mad at God, but in the back of my mind, I was still feeling, no, he can't be as bad as I'm making him out to be. So I still had a little grain of faith, and I kept asking him, if this is the direction you want me to go in, then keep the doors open. If it's not, close them. Well, I continued to go through the open doors, and then it culminated in me not being able to get a job in what I wanted to do. And one of the last things I had to do to get the to finish my education as an EMT was to get a driver's license from the DMV for driving an ambulance. I went to this doctor, and he discovered that I had a lump in my neck. And so he knew how much radiation I had received as a kid, and so he wanted me to have it checked further. So he sent me to a specialist. They did a biopsy, and they said, you have papillary thyroid cancer. So now I was facing my second bout of cancer after tumors and everything else. It just was getting to be too much. And I got mad at God. And I said, you know, every time I try to get to know you more, bad things happen. I want to try something new. I'm going to leave you alone. How about you leave me alone? And I tell you, John, that was a mistake. Because we can be going along in our life, and God affords a certain blessing and protection over our life that's all a part of his trying to woo us into a relationship with him. And he's a gentleman, and if we stand in his face and say, I don't want you in my life, he respects that. But when his presence is pulled from your life, even if it's just a little bit, it's actually doing a lot for you. And as soon as he respected my wish to leave me alone, things got really bad. And that's when I came to realize that just as I was learning that there is a God, now I was really realizing what it's like when there is no God. And now that God was not present in my life, I started to feel the reality of evil. And that just as there's a God, there's a devil.
This is what I think is described by St. John of the Cross as a dark night of the soul.
Yeah. And, you know, I went through that dark night of not having God close to me. And when I felt that darkness, I knew that I'd made a mistake. And I immediately changed my thoughts and my tune, and I said, God, I'm sorry, you know, please come back and to my life, and I need your closeness in my life. Don't let me succumb to what can happen when you're not with me. And when I did that, I suddenly began to feel everything I had learned in my head that was head knowledge transferred to my heart. And, you know, I heard it once said that the greatest distance that can be traveled is about 18 inches. And you know that 18 inches is the approximate distance from your head to your heart.
I had a therapist once who told me, you can get it in your head or you can get it in your heart, that you have to get them both together. And that's where he said that the same thing, that's the greatest distance in the world is the distance between your head and your heart.
Yeah. So, and when I had that transfer, you know, those 18 inches, and I started to feel in my heart the presence of God that I knew in my head was real, it was different. It was now from knowledge to experience.
I was reading a book on the Quaker movement, and they were constantly under criticism for their belief system because they believed that there is an indwelling of God in us, what they call the still small voice, and that if we don't pay attention to it, that is, you know, it's always there. We just have to pay attention to it. And I think that's what you're saying from a little different perspective.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention. If you don't, then you're sort of in your own wilderness.
And you know, as time was going on and I was trying to get to know God more, I was feeling a peace that it really didn't matter what would happen tomorrow because I knew who was holding my tomorrow. And as I learned to have more faith and trust, I just couldn't explain it, it was just a peace that I experienced. And it wasn't until I started to have those neurological symptoms start happening again, and they found that I had more brain tumors. And while they were checking that out, then I finally got my diagnosis, and they said, you know what, you also have MS. And they weren't telling me anything I didn't already suspect in my heart, but now I had, at least it was confirmed. And I've dealt with, I was officially diagnosed with MS about 10 years ago, but I know looking back now that I've been dealing with it for about 20 years.
Yeah, well, you know Susan Klein, she's in your MS group, and she told me that she was diagnosed somewhere in the area of her 50th birthday, which she did not want as a birthday present. But she said, thinking back on it, that there were indications many, many years before that this was, you know, something wasn't quite wrong, but she ignored them, you know. And some of the symptoms, from what I understand, are so minor in people that they just don't, they stumble or something, they think they're just having a bad day, or, you know, there's,
you're just tripping.
My aunt used to call it dropsy, you know, you drop something, oh, you got the dropsy.
Yeah, the whoopsie.
Which is an entirely different thing. But
the whoopsies.
Yeah. So you were studying to be a physician, and that, you know, you were led to something else that led you somewhere else, and
well,
another story. Okay, let's go with it.
As I really started to really take stock of my life and yield my desires to what God is your desire for me, and I started to feel myself being led in another direction. And I actually went to Bible school for a while, and I was kind of wondering, what am I doing here? Why am I in school? But I was feeling peace that I was growing my relationship with God. Well, one of the positive side benefits of going there is that's where I met Valerie. And she's been my wonderful companion for the last 16 and a half years. And one of the greatest tangible gifts that God has given me has been her support.
In reading your book, I have to say that I have not only a great deal of respect for you, but an amazing respect for Valerie. And when you see how easy people flee from relationships when things get tough, it's you two are really remarkable.
Well, you know, when I was diagnosed with MS and I started going to MS groups and wanted to learn as much about this disease as I could, I would encounter all sorts of people whose story was basically they were by themselves because as soon as their spouse found out that they had a chronic terminal, or not necessarily terminal, but a chronic condition that was going to dramatically change how life used to be, those people didn't want to be around it, and so they would jump ship. And so one day, actually, when I was feeling a little down in my feelings, having the doldrums, I decided I'd have a heart-to-heart with Valerie, and I said, you know, I know you didn't sign up for this, you know, when you married me. And I thought that all my medical problems were behind me, but now we're facing this new one. And if you want to go, I'm going to let you have the easy way out. I'm going to bring up the subject, and if you want to go back home to your parents and go on with your life, I'll let you do that. And you know, I have to tell you, John, she put me on my place and she pointed a finger at me, and I thought it was going to be a finger of condemnation, but it wasn't. What she was doing is she was pointing behind me at a picture on the wall. And it was a picture of us on the altar on our wedding day. And she said, you know, don't you remember that day? And I said, I do. She said, well, do you remember the vow we made? I said, yeah. She said, I promised that I was going to love you in sickness and in health, for better or for poorer. And I am not going anywhere. And boy, I had to hang my head in shame and realize that God just loves me so much and giving me such a wonderful partner to help me, you know, in this life.
Every now and again, we need that slap up the side of the head.
Yeah. A reality check.
Yeah, I know. My wife and I talk about that, too. It's just that, you know, we're in it for the long haul. That's what we have to be. If you're not, why get married? You know, it's an amazing journey. And sometimes the journey takes you in places you never expected.
Yeah. And, you know, it's that same kind of relationship with God, that when you dedicate yourself to Him, He's dedicated to you even before you are to Him. And He doesn't abandon you when those hard times come in life. And that's what gives me strength when I face these hurdles and things that come up, you know, around the bend that I can't see. He sees them before I do, and He helps me through those hard times. And He's given me a good, tangible partner to also hold my hand and show me love when I need encouragement. You know, Valerie's my physical representation of God's love.
It's, I've learned that there are many manifestations of divine power that we can't conceive of until they're there, until they happen in our lives.
Well, people,
and some of them are very tangible and some of them are intangible.
People sometimes want to put God in a box, you know, and say, this is how you're supposed to experience Him.
That has been one of my arguments with organized religion for a long time, is that, and I wrote a poem about that, you know, they put God in a box and then they dust Him off on Sundays and bring Him out, and it doesn't bear any resemblance to the God that dwells in our hearts.
I don't believe in religion. I believe in relationship.
Right.
And that's true Christianity.
Well, the word religion comes from the Greek meaning to bind together, to bring. And quite often we see that it tears people apart. And we saw that in Northern Ireland. You see that in the Islamic world, sects of two different sects that worship the same God, yet they're blowing up each other's holy places. I can't understand that. It doesn't equate to me. It's is a horrible sin to kill people in prayer. So it's an active belief, a living belief that's ongoing, is what I think is so important. We have to live and be the belief that we claim. There's a lot of people who claim it, but what is it? You can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk?
Yeah.
And obviously, you walk the walk. You do it with crutches, but you do it more upright than most people on the planet.
I'm so blessed that I'm using the crutches, because for many years, you know, I walked with a single cane, and then I had to go to two canes, and then I had to go to crutches. And actually last year, when they were trying to treat yet another brain tumor, I had a side effect from a radiation treatment that triggered my MS again. And it actually paralyzed me.
Yeah, that's another story I'd like you to get into, because that shows to me, I think most people would just say, give up, let me die. Well, no, not you.
Yeah. Well, I actually, you know, I had those periods of discouragement. I was feeling, God, I know who you are, but I'm not feeling it. And I'm asking you to help me, and I don't feel like I'm getting it. But He finally had to let me get to a point of where I was relying on my own independence. And that independence was being taken away from me, because, you know, there came a time when I just lost complete control of my legs. And then I lost control of my right arm, and I became 100% dependent on other people. I couldn't even sit up in bed. I had to be dressed and bathed and fed. And you know, you go from a person who's totally independent, you know, with little disability setbacks, but here is full-blown dependence on others. And as I lost my independence, I learned dependence. And that dependence was to rely more on God, because what other choice did I have but to rely on my friends, my family, my wife, you know, and my God. And it was a dark time, but I went through it. And as soon as that perspective changed in me, that, you know, I really don't have any other choice but to continue to trust. It's worked in the past, and it will work again. And even when I'm not feeling it, I'm still going to believe it. And as I did, and that change happened in my mental perspective, things started to change. And in my therapy, I took my first step. And then I took a second step, you know, the next day. And then, you know, I remember telling my wife, you know, oh, I took 5-6 steps today. And, you know, I couldn't do it independently. I had to hold on to parallel bars and things like that. But every day I got stronger, not just physically, but spiritually, as I mentally realized that, God, I have to depend on you to get better. And he was faithful, as he's always been. And today I'm up and walking again. I do it with crutches, but I'm not stuck in a chair like I was.
There is a man, I don't know if you would be familiar with him, his name, he goes, his given name is Richard Alpert. He was a Harvard professor of psychology. And he and a man named Timothy Leary did the early experiments with LSD in psychological settings. And Leary went in one direction with it, took it out to be a recreational drug, got himself in a lot of trouble. And Richard had some profound religious insights with it and went on to... to study with a man or in India, and took the name Baba Ramdas. And he, about 6 years ago, had a very debilitating stroke and ended up, there was a movie made about it called Fierce Grace, and his realization that he wasn't in charge, that it was God who was taking care of him. And it showed the process of him had been a vital, healthy, happy man to being completely at the mercy of others.
Yeah.
And gradually coming back. And he said it made his faith stronger. It didn't diminish it. And he had these dark moments, but then when he learned to give it up and just say, put his trust in God, it turned around. And he is now able to get out of his wheelchair. He does have some bladder problems, but when you are laid that low, and if you have a background of faith and belief, I think it's... can make all the difference in the world. It does make all the difference in the world.
But I want to make an important point, though, is that sometimes you pray and you don't get the answer that you're praying for.
Exactly.
And that doesn't change who God is. It's because one thing I've learned in reading the Bible is that we're created beings, and there's two parts to us. There's our physical body, and then there's our spirit, our soul. And because of things that happened a long time ago, man decided to rebel and do his own thing, and he turned his back on God. And because of that, we have a susceptibility now in our genetics that causes us to think we can do it on our own. We don't need God. And because of that, there's sin. And it changed the whole dynamic of the world. The way it was originally created was not as it is today. And it's not what God has for us. And we need to know that his perspective is something beyond what we experience here. And our bodies originally were designed to keep going. But because of sin, decay happens, and now our bodies are falling apart. But our spirit is not. And when this body gives up and goes, our soul is not. And we have to make a decision, where do we want our soul to go when this body gives up its, you know, its ability to continue. And, you know, I'm a person that likes to look at imagery and look at things. And I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, we are all on a journey, but there is a destination that we need to get to, and that's an eternal destination, and you need to make a decision now before the body gives up. Where do you want your spirit to go? And you know, you have to look at it like, in this life it's a journey we're all on, but we're going around in vehicles that are falling apart, and eventually they're going to give up and they're going to quit, and our gas gauge is busted. We don't know how much gas is left in the tank, but we're just kind of going around. And there comes a point as you're going down all these different roads trying to find significance in life that you realize, you know what? I need perspective. I need direction. I need help. And you may get a thought. You know what I need? I need the GPS. As you're going along, you're just trying to find a GPS, but you have no idea where you're going to find one. Suddenly you see somebody along the road that flags you down and says, you know what? I have a friend, and he can give you a GPS to get you where you want to go. You immediately get excited, say, okay, how much? And the friend says, it's free. You may not buy that. You may say, well, there's got to be some catch. I've got money, how much? It's free. It's a gift. But you know, a gift is not a gift unless the giver gets the receiver to take it. Then it's a true gift. And you know, you have a decision to make. When somebody says, you know, I know somebody who has a GPS that can give you direction and get you to a destination that I know you're going to love. But there is a little bit of a catch. This is a predetermined GPS. It already has its destination set. But it's a great place. You're going to love it when you get there. It's beautiful. The buildings are great. The beds are soft. You know, the people are wonderful. There's love. And you know the best part? There's no sorrow. There's no pain. There's no broken down bodies. It's wonderful. I'm telling you, it's heaven. You have a decision to make. Are you going to take that free gift? Or are you going to say, no, I'm going to continue down the road and see where I end up? So that's what I want to leave the listeners with, something to think about, you know. I've made my decision. I have peace. What decision are you going to make?
Well, thank you, Anthony. And we're going to have to wind this up because the gentleman behind us is standing in the wings. Mr. Richard Tews is coming on with So Many Roads. But I wanted to talk about your book a little bit before we close this down. And it is, you know, it doesn't quite say it all. Ordinary Man, An Extraordinary Life, Fighting and a Fighting Chance. You are an extraordinary man, and I see a great man of faith, and great to have people check it out. So the title of the book, and real quickly, if you could give, just tell me when you're going to stick. Where did you get the stick me? Where did you get that title?
Well, the cover of the book, I have a teddy bear, and he's getting his blood drawn. There's a set of hands with surgical gloves drawing blood from this teddy bear. And see, when I was a kid and I had leukemia and I was in the hospital just continually, and needles were an everyday part of my life, and they became so routine that it got to a point where I would just put out my arm when I would see the lab technician and say, just tell me when you're going to stick me. And so that's where the title comes from, is my catchphrase that I adopted as a kid.
Now, this is Zulon Press?
Yeah. It's a self-publishing publisher that, you know, I wanted to write an inspirational memoir that would just be an encouragement to people, and that nobody, no creative entity would have control over what I could say or not say, to just be a source of encouragement. And so that's why I chose to do self-publishing.
And where can you find it?
It is available all over the internet. You can go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You could just do a a search engine search for my name. My name, do it. My complete name is Anthony, middle initial D, like Dominic, Rabak, R-A-B-A-K, and the full title is Just Tell Me When You're Gonna Stick Me.
Now, I understand that there's a possibility that you can get it at Words on Paper.
Now, if you feel like you want to get it somewhere locally and support our local economy, I know that Words on Paper on Mill Street is interested in carrying the book. So if you go to them or some of the other local bookstores and just say, hey, I want to get a copy of this book,
they know where to get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go out with a song that is very important to me. It's Don McLean, and it's a song that I've often dedicated to my wife, and I wanted to dedicate it to you and Valerie.
Can I just say one last important thing is when you're searching the title on the Internet,
yep.
It's Just Tell Me When You're Gonna Stick Me.
And you're gonna.
G-O-N-N-A, gonna. And if you don't use that word gonna in the title, the search engines don't pick it up. So.
Okay, thank you, Anthony.
You're welcome.
And we have to thank for this last hour Sierra Solar Systems serving the foothills and environment for 29 years offering...